Right, we're going to be in the book of Daniel again tonight. We talked about Daniel in our last lesson and looked at some of the early events in his life. And I thought about just moving on, but I really think we ought to take a little time tonight and talk about a couple other things with that, and then, of course, the end part of Daniel's life as well. We often read and study about him as an example of youth and to our young people, because he was most likely a teenager when he was taken into captivity. But his story doesn't end there, of course. When we get over to chapter 6, we're nearing the end of the captivity, and so he's in his 80s. Depending on how old he was when he was taken into captivity, he's pushing 90 and may even be in his 90s. And so he's an example of faithfulness, not just in youth, but all the way through his life and even into, you know, older age. So it's good to see both sides of that with him. But there were a couple of things that we were looking at in chapter 1 that I wanted to mention just briefly. We talked, of course, about him being taken into captivity and that he had purposed in his heart not to defile himself. And because of that, he wouldn't eat of the king's food and things of that nature. And because of that, of course, he grew and prospered and was the best of all those that had been taken captive. But I wanted to note with you, first of all, in verse 9, and then we'll go down to verse 17 at the end of the chapter. But it says in verse 9, "Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs." And what's important there to remember, of course, is that God had done this. And we talked about that in relation to Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon, that God raised up Nebuchadnezzar and the nation of Babylon to punish Judah, to punish his people, and also the other nations of the world, even down to Egypt as well. But we talked about how it was God's doing, and that was true. But it was also true that while God did that to punish his people, he was also faithful to those who were faithful to him. And so even though Daniel has gone into a very difficult situation and through difficult trials on himself in his own life, God was still with him and still true to him. And so the reason that things worked out the way that they did and the reason that he was blessed and all of those things is not just a matter of luck or chance, but God had a hand in it. When you come down to verse 17, we begin to see that. It says, "As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even under the first year of King Cyrus." And so we read that passage and we see the intellect and the wisdom of Daniel and his friends. And then we begin to see, you know, how far advanced they were, 10 times better than those who had been brought up in Babylon. And, you know, that was their way of life and their education system and all of that. Daniel and his friends were better. And what we understand is what verse 17 told us, that God gave them knowledge and skill and understanding and all wisdom. And that doesn't mean they didn't do anything on their own and it just miraculously came in their heads, but God had a hand in guiding their lives and in blessing them and taking care of them. So Daniel was faithful to God, and of course God was faithful to him, and not just him, but all those who were faithful to him. And so what we see in Daniel's life throughout the story of his life is that God was always there working through his providence. And sometimes miraculously, Daniel, you know, interpreting Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2, that was revelation from God, of course. God gave Nebuchadnezzar the dream, and he gave Daniel the interpretation. But God was also working through his providence to make sure that Daniel and his friends, you know, were put with the right leader who had the right kind of heart that would allow them not to defile themselves and all of those things. And God made sure that when they came before Nebuchadnezzar, you know, it was the right time that he could see the goodness in them and all of those things. And so to those who were unfaithful, the faithless people of Judah, God brought punishment and captivity. But to those who were faithful, even though they also had to go through the captivity, God didn't use it as a means to punish them, but it was he provided for them protection and care. And it even became a means of advancement for them. Daniel is going to be greatly blessed in Babylon because of the captivity. And so this thing that's punishment for the wicked people becomes a means of blessing for the faithful. And that's always important to remember, that God is able and faithful to punish the wicked and reward those who are not, those who are faithful to him. And so God shows his faithfulness through Daniel and his relationship with the prince of the eunuchs, through the appearance of Daniel and his friends after those 10 days eating that special diet that they were eating. He showed his faithfulness by blessing all four of these young men with great wisdom. Again, not miraculously, Daniel and the friends, they still had a role to play. They had to study and they had to apply themselves in their learning and all of that. But they excelled because God was blessing them. And then on top of that, Daniel was given that blessing to be able to interpret dreams. But God was showing his faithfulness. The fact that they were superior to the others was the blessing of God. And so in many ways, Daniel, you know, is kind of like Joseph. Joseph was sent before to prepare the way for God's people to come down into Egypt and to have a place to live and, you know, to be provided for. Well, Daniel is kind of in that place as well. He's in captivity, but he's preparing things so that they can come back out of captivity and the knowledge of God can go into Babylon. And ultimately, what Daniel is doing, and even what Joseph was doing to a degree, is preparing the world for the Messiah. And so Daniel's prophecies are going to tie into what this captivity and the return from it means. Ultimately, is the bloodline continues and Jesus is going to be born. And so God's providence toward Daniel is because of his faithfulness, both of Daniel and of God, but also because of God working out his plan. So when Daniel was a young man, God was faithful to him because Daniel was faithful to God. When we go over to chapter 6 now, we see the same thing at the later years of his life in the story that we're all familiar with of Daniel and the lion's den, we call it. The Bible calls it a den of lions because there were actually lions in there. And again, we see Daniel being faithful, but also God being faithful to him. So let's read a few verses. Just start in verse 1 of chapter 6. It says, "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was the first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm." So we see here, first of all, Daniel being exalted. And so this is, again, later in his life. He's growing older, and we're coming toward the end of the captivity. But Daniel is still prospering, and God's providence is with him, and he's showing himself to be superior in every way. So you have these 120 princes. They're lieutenants is kind of the idea. They're going to help oversee the nation of Babylon. And he sets up three princes or presidents over the lieutenants, and Daniel is one of those. But Darius soon realized that Daniel was better than all of them, and he had great value to the kingdom of Babylon. And he didn't judge him by his age. He didn't judge him by, you know, how he looked or by his political connections. He judged Daniel based on his character. He had an excellent spirit, and that excellent spirit, that character, comes from God and his word. So because he had purposed his heart not to defile himself, Daniel had lived an undefiled life, which developed godly character, an excellent spirit. So if we want to have an excellent spirit, we need to devote ourselves, as Daniel did, to not defiling ourselves and being faithful to God and, you know, studying and learning and growing in all the ways that God wants us to. So, you know, just because you get older doesn't necessarily mean you get better. We have to work at that. And that's what Daniel had done all of his life. So it's not just because he's older, but it's because of his character. And so Darius exalts him again. And keep in mind that Darius here is under the rule of Cyrus. So Cyrus is a Mede. So we're in the time when the Medes and Persians are overtaking and have overtaken Babylon. And Cyrus is going to be the one to send the children of Israel back to Judah. And so the rule of Darius here is still under the authority of Cyrus. But it shows Daniel still present and still prospering. So in verse 4, it says, "Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him." So because Daniel was doing so well and so highly favored, they wanted to do something to remove him. That position should be mine. I should have that authority, not Daniel. He's not even one of us. He's an Israelite, right? So they want to take that place for themselves. So they're trying to find something against Daniel in relation to his work in the kingdom and for the kingdom, but they couldn't find anything. And so we learn a lesson here about envy. And envy, of course, is very dangerous to a person's heart. Daniel had an excellent spirit because he was not defiling himself. But those who become envious do defile themselves, and it causes great spiritual damage. We mentioned Joseph earlier in Acts chapter 7 and verse 9. It says, "And the patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him." So the reason his brothers sold him into slavery, and you know, ultimately they wanted to kill him, and Judah talked them out of it, was because of envy. They envied Joseph's relationship with his father. They envied the fact that he could interpret dreams. They envied all these things that he could do, and he was younger than them and all of that. And so that motivated them, you know, to get rid of him. They thought they had. But that's what envy does. In Acts 17 and verse 5, we read that the Jews which believed not, moved with envy, took unto them certain lewd fellows of the baser sort, and gathered a company, and set all the city on an uproar, and assaulted the house of Jason, and sought to bring them out to the people. And so Paul is, of course, preaching the gospel, and the Jews become envious, because people are listening to him and they're believing him and they're becoming Christians. And so moved with envy, these people who were so religiously strict that they wouldn't have anything to do with a sinner, right? You remember when Jesus would talk with sinners or eat with sinners or have any association with them, the Pharisees, you know, said, how dare he do that? You're not supposed to have any contact with him. Well, they went to lewd fellows of the baser sort, people with no moral standard that you could hire to do whatever dirty work you needed done. And that's who they became associated with to try to destroy the church. And so they caused this uproar in the city. There was rioting. They went to the house of Jason and assaulted it and were dragging people out in the street. And all of that was because of envy, because people were listening to Paul and not following them anymore. So they were envious. Well, it's the same thing that's happening here with Daniel. These men envy him, and envy leads a person, you know, first of all, it starts to fester in your heart until it becomes active and you start doing things based on that envy. When you become envious, you'll reject the truth because you don't want to hear what's true anymore. You believe what you want, and that's what's going to motivate you. Then you start to destroy other people. It ultimately results in self-destruction. And if we're not careful, envy can destroy the church. 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 3, that was the problem in Corinth. Envy was leading them to hate one another and tear apart from one another. Also James chapter 3. So that's what's happening here. So verse 5 says, "Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore, King Darius signed the writing and the decree. So notice a couple of things here. The first thing is that the people who were trying to get something on Daniel said, we're not going to be able to do that unless it has to do with the law of his God. Now, can that be said about us? You know, it ought to be able to be said about us that if somebody wants to get something on us, the only way they're going to be able to do that is to try to get us to go against God's law, because we're faithful in all that we do. What's important about this, not the only thing, but one thing that's important, is that we need to remember that we're not talking about Daniel and was he faithful to the assemblies of the synagogue, or, you know, those kinds of things. We're talking about Daniel when he was at work. When Daniel was at work, they couldn't find anything that he did that wasn't honest and fair and true and what was best for his boss, the king of Babylon and the nation of Babylon, or now Medo-Persia. Everything that he did in, you know, his personal life, in his job, was honest and above board. So they couldn't say, well, Daniel's pretty good, but, you know, he embezzled a little money over here. He did this that was dishonest, right? Everything that they looked at in his record and the decisions he had made and the work that he had done, it was all honest. It wasn't about how many times he prayed a day or how many assemblies he went to or any of those things. It was about how he lived his daily life. And they said, we got nothing on him. He didn't tell dirty jokes, and he didn't hang around with wrong people, and he wasn't, you know, any of those things that sometimes we get the idea that we have to be good when we're at church, but it's different when we're around different people. They couldn't find anything on him in his life except that his God and his God's law was different from the religion of Babylon. That's the only thing we can get him on. And so that's what they did. And so they go to the king and they appeal to his pride and say, we came up with this great idea to honor you, king, because we love you so much. We want to make a decree that if anybody asks anything of any god or any man except for you for 30 days, they're thrown into the den of lions. And the king said, you know, that sounds great, because what an honor for him that every request could only be made of him. And so that's exactly what he did, and he signed this decree. And notice that it says of the law of the Medes and Persians, which means that it cannot be changed. So that was the system of law then. Once the king signed something, you couldn't take it back. It was in effect. And so that law had to stand. So again, we remind ourselves that living the faithful life is not just about Sundays. You know, it's about everything that we do in our lives to be faithful to God. And so they couldn't find anything on him concerning that. They came up with this plot to ensnare him. We come down to verse 10, and we find Daniel being entrapped by them in this. And so I'm not going to read all of this, because we know the story, and it's kind of repeating what we just said. But they get the king to agree to this, and the king finds out, you know, that this was a trap to get Daniel. So verse 10 says, now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. And so verse 11, these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. So they tell the king, verse 14, the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. So Daniel found out what they had done, and notice that they lied about it. They said that all of the presidents of the kingdom think this is a great idea. Well, that wasn't true, because they didn't ask Daniel. or if they did, he didn't agree with it. But anyway, when it was signed, Daniel found out about it, and he did not let the law of the land change his devotion to God. Instead, he continued to pray as he had done aforetime. And so Daniel didn't start doing something different to, you know, cause trouble or to force himself to break this law. He just kept on living his life the way he had been living it, you know, for 80 years in the land of Babylon. And so they changed the law, but that really doesn't change anything in relation to the law of God and Daniel's relation to that. So he went into his house. He didn't change his routine, you know, by going somewhere else and saying, well, they passed this law and it's not really right and it's not really just, so I'll keep praying, but I'll go do it somewhere secret. Well, nobody will know about it. No, the law was not right, and so Daniel didn't follow the law. He did what he normally did. He went to his house like he always had. His windows were open, so he wasn't trying to hide it. He didn't want to keep it from anybody. He was not afraid to do what was right and to set a good example before others, even if he could be killed for it. So he kept his windows open. His windows were open toward Jerusalem, the Bible says. So he continued to face in the direction of his homeland in hope of the promise of a return. And so that was showing where his heart was and where his devotion was. Even though he's been faithful in his service to Babylon, he still is one of, you know, of the tribe of Judah. He's still a descendant from the nation of Israel, and that's where God's people belonged. And so that's where his devotion was. If they didn't like that, he didn't care, because he was going to be true to what he knew was right. He knelt upon his knees, the Bible says, which shows his humility in the posture of his prayer, and also it makes it obvious to anybody who's looking that he was praying, and that he's not praying to the king, he was praying to God. And then he prayed three times a day. And so he didn't, start praying before the sun came up so nobody would see him, or after the sun had gone down so nobody would see him. Instead, he kept his long-standing practice of three times a day, morning, noon, and evening. So at the dawn and at noon and at sunset. But Daniel prayed just the way that he always had. And it's a fundamental principle. When the law of the land goes against the law of God, we have to do what the law of God says. And, you know, Daniel didn't go out and start a riot. He just kept obeying, and he said, if you're going to kill me, then, you know, come kill me, whatever. But what he's demonstrating, of course, is his complete confidence and trust in God. And that takes us right back to where we started. Daniel knew from the time that he was a young man that God was with him. And he knew that God was with him because he was with God. He was faithful to God, and God is the one who had blessed him when he was a teenager taken into captivity. And all through his life, when he was faithful to God, God took care of him. And so now that they've made this trap for him and they're threatening his life, Daniel, in his older age, is not going to say, well, I'm not going to be faithful to God anymore. He's learned through this lifetime of faithfulness that God is always true to him. So he's not going to let anything cause him to turn away from God. So he just keeps on praying. And his trust is that God will take care of this, whatever has to be done. And so that's, again, the great lesson. When we've seen God's faithfulness before, we need to trust that when bigger tests and challenges come. And so they assembled, which means it's the idea of a mob. They got together with the purpose of catching Daniel in this and then let the king know. And in the end, there's nothing that the king could do except follow the law that he'd signed. So in verse 15, they remind him of that. In verse 16, the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, thy God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet, and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. So even though King Darius was sore displeased with himself, he realized what they had done, that they had concocted this whole scheme to trap Daniel, and he'd fallen for it because of his own pride. He was very upset with himself. How could I have been so, you know, foolish to do this? But there's nothing he could do, and so he gave the command, and they put Daniel into the den of lions. And I always mention that it's a den of lions in the Bible because sometimes, you know, those who try to deny the miracles of the Bible, they say, well, Daniel was thrown in the lion's den, but that was just an empty den, and there weren't any lions in it. They used to live there, but nobody was home, to try to say that there wasn't a miracle. But the Bible doesn't call it a lion's den. It calls it a den of lions. So it was a den, a cave-like thing, but there were lions in it. And that's where Daniel was put. And so it was kind of a pit, apparently sloped downward, and they rolled this stone in front of it to cover the entrance of it. And so now Daniel's down in there with the lions. The king puts his seal on it and the seal of the Lord's, which shows that this punishment was legal by the law of the land, obviously not by God's law. Even though it was against the king's will, he didn't want this to happen. That's the way the law worked, and he couldn't change it. And so he put his seal upon it. And so Darius, in doing this, makes that great statement showing, you know, trust in God and in Daniel. So he also has been impressed by Daniel and his character and those things. And so he says to Daniel, thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And notice that even the king knew that Daniel served God continually, not every Sabbath day, but continually, every day of his life, Daniel was faithful to God. And Daniel had showed that in being faithful to the king, as well as, you know, staying true to what God taught. So Darius trusted that, you know, God would deliver him. And it's sad that, you know, this pagan king knew more or had more faith in God than God's own people did in those days, and even sometimes today. So in verse 18, the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. So he couldn't eat and he couldn't sleep. Then the king rose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. When he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God hath sent his angel and hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me. For as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. Then was the king exceedingly glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. And so Daniel, of course, is freed here, emancipated from the den of lions. We don't know how Daniel spent his night in the lion's den, but we know how Darius spent his, without any sleep and without any food, worrying over Daniel. And he was so anxious about it that, you know, first thing in the morning he ran to the mouth of the den in order to find out what had happened. And surely he was relieved when he heard Daniel's voice. And Daniel gives, you know, answers very clearly about what happened. First of all, he says that he'd been delivered by God. God was the one who did this. Secondly, he says it was by an angel. Thirdly, it was by a miracle that the angel closed the lion's mouths. And then fourth, and very importantly for us to remember, Daniel had been delivered by his innocency. The fact that he was pure and he was innocent, that he hadn't done wrong and he didn't deserve this. We need to remember that, again, when it comes to the day of judgment. If we are innocent, and none of us are innocent in the sense that we've never done wrong, we're all guilty of sin, but if the blood of Jesus has washed those sins away, then we are pure and innocent. Justified, again, is being just as if I'd never sinned. And so if we're innocent, there's nothing to fear on the day of judgment, because God will instead reward us and provide for us. And then finally, he'd been delivered by his faithfulness, because he believed his God, verse 23 says, and Hebrews 11:33 mentions Daniel in faith's hall of fame. And so he's brought up out of the den. And then verse 24, those that had accused Daniel And they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, their wives. And the lions had the mastery of them and break all their bones in pieces wherever they came at the bottom of the den. So it wasn't that the lions weren't hungry, because when they threw these others in, before they could hit the ground, the lions were tearing them to pieces. But God miraculously protected David. And so you learn from that, you know, that you reap what you sow, that they wanted to do this to Daniel, and God provided justice for them, and that they were punished by the very thing that they tried to do to him. So, you know, again, another important lesson. Darius issues another decree here. If you notice in verse 25, King Darius wrote unto all the people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Understand what this means when he writes this letter and he sends it, you know, out throughout his kingdom, that the Medo-Persian Empire, which has just taken over Babylon, you know, that's all the way from over in the east, modern day Iran, and little toward India, but through Iraq and Turkey and Syria and down Israel today, all the way down into Egypt, all the way over to the west, in getting into the regions of Greece and near to Rome. This letter goes out from a pagan king who says, Jehovah is the living God. And this letter was to be read throughout all of his kingdom. Everybody's being told about God and what he did for Daniel because of Daniel's faithfulness. So this is, you know, it's kind of evangelism, the message going into the known world, the entire Babylonian Empire, all because Daniel stayed true to God throughout all of his life. All the ups and downs of it, he was faithful to God, and in turn, God was faithful to him. And that became a message of hope and of salvation to all those who would hear it and then submit to the one true God of heaven. And so David is such a powerful story of great character, but the results of it always to the benefit of God and to glorify him and to honor him. And even as he says here, you know, this is all throughout my kingdom, but the real kingdom is God's kingdom that he's going to establish that will stand forever. And that's what Daniel had been showing through all these prophecies. So it's a fascinating part of his story, and I thought it was good for us to look at that. But we'll finish up Daniel here. And Lord, we'll go into the prophets after the captivity in our next lesson. So we'll stop here for now. Pick up there next time. I just wanted to mention real quick, some had suggested, and we talked about it in a recent elders meeting, about the men of the congregation doing the Devo on Wednesday nights, off and on. And so we're starting that tonight. John's been working on it, and we got a pretty good list of people who wanted to do that. And so the plan is right now on the first Wednesday night and then on singing night that one of the men of the congregation will be doing this. And our first victim, I mean volunteer, is Seth Epler. So he's going to go tonight. So want everybody to know that.
If you were choosing men to turn the world upside down, who would you pick? What kind of people would you pick from? I might pick lawyers. They know how to make a point. Maybe a politician or writers. Their pens triumph even the sword. Investors, they understand that large undertakings require capital. Or CEOs, they know what is needed for oversight and administration. But Jesus chose fishermen. He picked men from one of the most common occupations of Galilee and chose them as his disciples. Not only did he choose these men, but he basically kept their title. Fishermen became fishermen, fishers of men. In Matthew 4:19, and he saith unto them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Think about it. He could have turned fishermen into lawyers. He could have turned these men into anything he wanted, but he didn't. He chose fishermen, and he made no attempt to change them from who they were. Why fishermen? Why might Jesus have chosen fishermen? First, they were courageous and daring. First century fishermen regularly put their lives on the line. The storms of the disciples faced with Jesus on the Sea of Galilee were undoubtedly not the only storms they had encountered. This lake is known for its violent storms that literally threaten lives. These men knew what it was to rub shoulders with danger, and because of their job, they dared to do it again and again. They have patience and determination. How many times do you think Peter, James, and John fished all night and came up with empty nets? Two such nights are recorded in the Bible, but I'm guessing there were more. Impatient or easily bored fishermen don't tend to be successful. They also worked well together. Fishing in the first century was not an occupation for loners. Peter and Andrew and James and John, as partners, the teamwork they had is seen in the gospel when the disciples went out fishing. They had to have faith. In many ways, this last point is a combination of everything we've talked about. The fishermen who Jesus called as disciples believed that their courage and patience, along with knowing with others, would be enough to make a living. Why else would they purchase boats and nets? Why else would they wash their empty nets to be used again the next day? It was these qualities, basic qualities for men of common fishermen, that Jesus used. When you think of it, fishers of men need the same traits: courage and daring. In Acts 4:29, "And now, Lord, behold their threatenings, and grant unto thy servants that with all boldness they may speak thy word." In Galatians 6:9, "And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." Teamwork. Philippians 1:27, "Only let your conversation be as it becometh the gospel of Christ, that whether I come and see you, or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that ye stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel." Faith. In Hebrews 11:6, "But without faith it is impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." If there is anyone that needs to make these things right with God, we are here to help. If you are ready to put on Christ in baptism, or if you have already made that commitment and need prayers to make things right, we can help. If you come as we stand and sing.